Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships for almost 18 years. And also to be able to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. So you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to click on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we help people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions and testimonials or answers. And if you have any of those to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And you can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and those are available absolutely free as another resource to get you trained up if you're not able to tune into the show live or call in and ask questions live. You can get the benefit of other people who've already done that and have shared their work with the recorded archives. So, yesterday I was planning to be here. I appreciate anybody who tuned in and listened to the Best Of show, but I had a patient in crisis and was working with that person from 11 until about 12:30. So we're grateful to everybody who's listening, as I've said, and we have time to entertain any comments or questions if people would like to do that to begin this week. Or we can get back into the way of mastery at lesson 15, which is where we were when last we spoke last Friday. It is one of the joys of my life to be able to share the way of mastery with people as a tool, as a resource, as a pleasant life experience, as something that's helped me really in many ways understand what was being offered in the Course in Miracles that was often eluding me. And so it's a joy for me to be able to share with others what benefits I have derived from working with this set of tools or this set of three books that's combined into one book called The Way of Mastery. So I'll just remind people that I'm welcoming calls and comments and questions, even if I'm in the middle of reading or in a monologue. Just call 563-999-3581 and press 1. It is an absolute help to us when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to be in alignment with what you need and how we can be of assistance. So even if I'm in the middle of reading, please feel free to put a hand up. I will either turn on the microphone immediately or wait for a good flow in the show and we'll entertain your comments or questions to the best of our ability. So we're reading in Lesson 15, and Lesson 15 is titled, Love or Fear, the Choice is Yours. And we had read on Friday that, beloved friends, the way of transformation does indeed require your commitment. But your commitment is freely given by you. No one can force you to do this. And those who have worked with these tools or moved a little bit ahead of us, it would seem, those entities, spirits, consciousness that would guide us will wait with absolute patience until you choose to engage a tool like this. And you have created the experience of being separate from your Creator, and you will create the experience of the path back to being consciously aware of your connection to your Creator. This lesson again brings us to the idea of choice and how important it is, because we have been given free choice, free will. And as it says in the Q&A from the Way of Mastery and recordings, there's one in particular where it says, free will cannot be usurped. If you choose to hold yourself in bitterness or resentment or upset, Yeshua himself can't change that. And the last paragraph we read from Friday says, and where love is chosen, when you choose love so that you want nothing else, then you will see nothing else but a lovely world. It's your choice of a filter. It's your choice of an interpretation. It's your choice of how to respond to the flow of life that creates your experience of life. And where love is chosen so that you want nothing else, you will see nothing else but a lovely world, infinite in dimension, sparkling in clarity, radiant in beauty. You will look upon it and say, behold, this is as it is. And the next segment is titled, A Meditation to Attune to the Will and Love of God, or the Creator. And the text reads, in this lesson, we wish to introduce a methodology for what you might call meditation. It is a form of communion or meditation that was initially and essentially taught to me by several of my friends, what you know as disciples, one of which carried this specific form of teaching and preserved it. Now, it did not originate with me. I merely refined it. For I, just like you, was once a student of the ways of seeking God, seeking the Creator. And I dove deep into the nature of consciousness and mind itself, and I discovered how to attune the mind, attune the emotions, and even the nervous system of the body to resonate with the perfect will and love of the Creator. To begin to prepare a place for that teaching. Now, notice these words. Not to create this, not to create a place, not to be done with it. To begin to prepare. To prepare a place for that teaching. For the next 30 days, return to the practice of abiding as Christ for at least 5 minutes once a day. And then, as that five-minute practice period is completed, allow the eyes to close, become aware of the simple movement of your own breathing, and simply hold this thought. I allow this breath to move deeply and slowly. And then, as you're beginning to feel that sense of relaxation ever more deeply, hold the thought, quote, as Christ, in perfect safety, I release all tension. As Christ, in perfect safety, I dissolve my mind in the perfect peace of the Creator, close quote. And then merely continue in this manner. As the breath comes to fill the body, gently, merely say, I accept. As you inhale, think, I accept. And as the breath leaves the body, gently say with your mind, the love of God. On the inhale, I accept. On the exhale, the love of God. Again, as the breath enters the body, think, I accept. And then as the breath leaves the body, think, the love of God. Continue in this manner for about 5 minutes, regardless of what the egoic mind says to you, and it will kick up a bit of a fuss. But simply return to this simple, simple practice. At the end of about 5 minutes, let the prayer that you have been offering change from words to energy. You might perceive it as a golden white light. You might feel it as a gentle flow of relaxation. Whatever works for you is fine. Continue gently to breathe that quality or that color into yourself with each breath. And with each letting go of the breath, imagine and feel that energy moving throughout the course of the body as though it were extending like a gentle breeze beyond the boundaries of the body. Again, if the egoic consciousness kicks up its heels and you start thinking of all the multitude of things that you ought to be doing, simply return to the prayer. For all prayer is nothing more than a choice to abide, to contemplate, and to rest in communion beyond egoic thought, beyond the intellect, beyond the trivialities that have been shoved into the intellect by your family and your culture and your language. After about another 5 minutes, then say within the mind, as Christ, I have celebrated in this manner. I have celebrated the truth of who I am and I bring peace to the world this day. So the quote is, as Christ, I have celebrated in this manner the truth of who I am, and I bring peace to the world this day. Close quotes. The text reads, allow this practice period to occur in the morning of your day and then again in the evening of your day. The only change would be that in the final phrasing for the evening, you simply say, quote, this day I have brought peace to the world and offered it to my companions. Close quotes. That should be clear enough and simple enough for you to begin. You may wish to refer back to the words in this meditation originally and use it as a guide for a period of time until it seems more comfortable for you to do it on your own. Those that embark on this simple process will be well prepared for what is to come in the lessons that follow. Of course, the implication is those who don't choose to do this are going to have a different experience in the lessons that follow. The next paragraph section is titled, the only energy that can separate you from the kingdom. Beloved friends, the world that you look upon is not real. It has never been real. It will never be real. But it is a creation that can be impregnated with the perfect love of the Creator. Remember always that there is only love or fear. What is not love can only be fear and is never justified. The world that you have made is thoroughly harmless. The world that you experience, which is the world that you have made in conjunction with others in any given moment, offers to you the opportunity to choose to impregnate it with love, or to allow it to reflect to you your fearful thoughts. You are not limited at any time. And in you, all power under heaven and earth is given. You have a phrase in your world, quote, there is nothing to fear but fear itself, close quotes. That is 98% accurate. Fear is the only energy that can separate you from the kingdom, and fear is never justified in any moment. The final 2% would be to say that there is nothing to fear since fear is only a temporary insanity, and your right-mindedness is but a choice away. Therefore, begin to look upon each situation, each moment or minute of your life, as a very separate scene in a movie. It has its certain set, its certain characters, it has a beginning, and it has an end. Although you are eternal, the things of time are not. And all things birthed in time will end in time. Therefore, you will use the moment. Will you use the moment birthed in time to bring what is eternal to it? Or will you continue to believe that yet within you there is no possible power to choose love over fear? Look around you. What do your eyes show you? Would you bless it or curse it? What would you teach yourself and therefore make true for yourself? The message of this lesson is being given slowly, deliberately, and carefully. For we want you to make no mistake in what is being shared, both in terms of the practice and in terms of the theory. The theory is important in your world, for it is only through theory that the mind, the little part of you that is arrogant, The mind will decide whether to value what the theory offers. And when you have placed value upon what the theory offers to you, you are then willing to embark on the practice that it requires. I hope this makes some sense to you. The fact of the matter is, the theory is nowhere near as important as the actual practice. Yet, there are those of us who need some structure of thought that we can value and hold up as this guiding principle before we'll take action that might benefit us. The text goes on and says, therefore, in this lesson, we're choosing to speak to you with more rationally than emotionally. We would ask you to consider this. Have you suffered enough? Have you kept yourself small long enough? Have you tasted limitation deeply enough to know that you want these things no longer? Would you be willing to patiently choose the dissolving of your illusions? For just the other side of each illusion is the freedom and the peace that you seek. That's such a powerful concept, and it says over and over again in this work, you are but the width of a thought away from connecting with your Creator or with Yeshua or with any other person, any other mind, any other soul, spirit, guide, etc. You are just the width of a thought away from that. And who has control over that thought? You do. Whether you've practiced it or not, whether you've been taught that you have the ability to shift the focus of your thoughts or to choose which thoughts you'll value or which thoughts you'll take action on, whether you've been taught it or not, the truth is still there. You do have the ability to choose differently. And what you choose to do with your thoughts is that mechanism that creates your experience of life. Looking at where we are with the filter of 100% responsibility, looking at responsibility as a tool that I can use to pick up so that when similar situations happen in the future, I can have the ability to respond differently. And understanding that this is a completely separate and independent concept from blame and guilt and shame and all of the negative labels that we have been conditioned into. The text goes on and says, in any moment you can tell quite clearly what you are most committed to. In any moment, you can tell quite clearly what you have been committed to. If your body is tight and uncomfortable, if you must speak with a louder voice, if your words come more quickly, if the brow is furrowed and the jaw is tense, rest assured, in that moment, you have chosen to be devoted to fear. Guy Finley, we've already talked about this several times in these first 15 lessons. Guy Finley says, you do what you value. So if you're in a rage state, it's because you are valuing being in the rage state. And the deeper work with this lets me know that every time I choose a rage state, it's because first I was experiencing a pain, a fear, or a sadness that I didn't know how to deal with directly or felt I didn't have the ability to deal with directly. And so I chose the rage state because it's more empowering. It's like a drug. It's a distraction. In any moment, you can tell quite clearly what you are most committed to. If the body is tight and uncomfortable, if you must speak with a louder voice, if your words come more quickly, if your brow is furrowed and the jaw is tense, rest assured you have chosen to be devoted to fear. You are like one who carries a magic wand filled with such power that you could merely wave it upon the face of the earth and extend the kingdom of heaven to every heart and every mind. What then can prevent the expression of such power? The only thing that can prevent the expression of such power is the fear that you have made to replace the reality of love. The reality of capital L love, the reality of the energy of creation as it expresses in form. The text goes on and says, as you look upon each segment, each scene, and each minute in your movie, cultivate the deliberate practice of recognizing that you are in a field of energy that is your perfect servant. Within that moment, you are the one with the power to make the moment be whatever you wish it to be. It can be filled with Christ consciousness, or it can be filled with temporary insanity. The choice is always yours. That could be, you know, the five words that summarize The Way of Mastery, all three books. The choice is always yours. If there was just one thing you could take from this, write that down. The choice is always yours. And Abraham says, your most important creation in every moment is the emotion you're experiencing in that moment. It's your access point to the creative force that is your mind energy that you have been given complete control over. So that paragraph again says, as you look upon each segment, each scene, and each minute in the movie of your life, begin to cultivate the deliberate practice of recognizing that you are in a field of energy and that that field of energy is your perfect servant. Within that moment, you are the one with the power to make that moment be whatever you wish it to be. It can be filled with Christ consciousness, or it can be filled with temporary insanity. The choice is always yours. The five words that summarize this book, the choice is always yours. And never, ever has there been such a thing as a victim. Now, that line alone is enough to get your intellect and your egoic mind kicking up. And what about the five-year-old who has cancer? And what about the people that went to a 4th of July parade and they got shot and now they're dead, what, et cetera, et cetera? Just watch how your mind wants to fight against the instructions we're being given for creating a better, different, more loving, more joyful, more peaceful life. The choice is always yours, and never, ever has there been such a thing as a victim. Just watch what your mind does with that. Just watch what your mind does with these five words as the summary of this entire three-book work. The choice is always yours. Therefore, the text goes on and says, therefore, as you enter into any one of your minutes, every moment, every minute, ask yourself this, quote, what is this moment for? What do I decree that this moment will be? What do I most want to learn by teaching it? Right? I learn what I live, and I live what I learn, and then I teach what I learn by living it. Therefore, this says, here's step by step, in each moment, ask yourself, what is this moment for? What do I decree this moment to be? What do I most want to learn by giving it to others, by teaching it to others? What do I most need to move forward in this life, blessing myself and creation and everyone I interact with? The text goes on and says, to teach is to demonstrate. To demonstrate is to express what you have decided will hold the greatest value for you. Back to Guy Finley. We do what we value. So if we say, I really want to go left, but I keep turning right, I value turning right. And the text goes on and says, whenever you judge another, you are decreeing that the thing of greatest value to you in your life in that moment is separation. Since judgment always causes contraction and therefore the experience of separation from another. And when you practice forgiveness, you are decreeing that what you value is joining in holy, peace-filled relationship. Remember that forgiveness has nothing at all to do with saying to one another, quote, I can see that you have sinned, but I forgive you your faults, close quote. No, forgiveness is the recognition that nothing has been done to you and that you would prefer to see the face of Christ in the one in front of you. So here we are picking up and clarifying even more forcefully what was in Lesson 3 with the power of forgiveness. The title of that lesson has, I think it's the power of forgiveness. Yeah, the title of that lesson is the power of forgiveness. And in that lesson, in the third lesson, it says, to forgive means to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is therefore an act of dismantling oneself, one's projections. And as we continue to dismantle our negative projections, we take ourselves deeper into the purity of our own consciousness. And if we keep doing that, we start to see how strongly we have been coloring and therefore affecting all of our relationships. Because the minute we forget that we are the ones creating our experience of life, in that moment, projection takes place and our mind starts showing us images and pictures of people and things outside of us causing our upset. And that's a rapid onset all the way to fruition process that kicks in the instant we forget that we are the ones creating our experience of life. So, the re-clarification here on page 184 in the 15th lesson is to say, remember that forgiveness has nothing at all to do with saying to another person, I can see that you have sinned, but I forgive you your faults. That's got nothing to do with forgiveness. Forgiveness is the recognition that nothing has been done to you, and the recognition that you would prefer to see the face of Christ in the one standing in front of you. And that is an option because that is the truth of life. And if you're not looking through a distorting filter, you will see, you will feel, you will get access to what this book has talked about in different ways as the shimmering radiance that underlies all of creation. It's like what the Course in Miracles says, that, you know, perception was made as an attack on God. The flow of life, the flow of creation is happening in, through, as, and around us each moment. And when we create pictures about it in our mind, it's a cheap substitute for the truth of life. And if we would be willing to take full responsibility for every experience that we create that's less than love, then our lives will start to reflect the truth of the gift of life, flow of life and love and creation. And we will experience our lives dramatically differently. However, we must be willing to take that responsibility. We must be willing to step into the actual awareness of what we're doing with our mind energy. If you could see, and Dr. Michael Rice talks about this in a variety of ways, he says, you know, the pictures that your mind shows you, just like Anil Seth points out in his videos, are hallucinations. They are just images your mind makes up. And if you could understand the truth of that, connect that to this resource we've been given, which is our emotional energy system, and understand that whenever our emotions are peaceful and loving and based on gratitude and compassion, we're probably headed in the right direction with our thoughts, words, and actions. And any time they go into tension or tightness or judgment or negativity, we are headed in the wrong direction with our thoughts, words, and actions. It's a built-in guidance system, and it's been thoroughly misinterpreted by most families and most cultures to the exact opposite effect, so that the more angry we get, the more we think we're right and the world is wrong. The more negative experience we have of life, the more we judge how life is wrong because it's not living up to our ideal. If we can take that wisdom of acknowledging how the system works and apply it directly to ourselves with 100% responsibility, we will transform our experience of life. Many people have done it. And it's essentially what we're being asked to do in this lesson. Again, hearkening back to the first lesson and the third lesson and weaving in things with the eighth lesson, and it's all connected. And there's a process that we could choose to engage in that no one can force us to engage in. But if we choose to engage in it soon and often, it will transform our experience of life. I had an occasion in a session earlier today to remind someone of the Gentle Art of Blessing by Pierre Pratervand. And that, you know, there's an interview of Pierre Pratervand that he did for the Mindshifters Radio that is available in the archives. It's available at mindshiftersacademy.org. But essentially, it's understanding that when I create a negative picture of someone, that's just a creation in my mind, and I'm free in that next moment to create a loving picture of that person. If I'm creating a picture in my mind and having judgment about somebody who's being impatient or dishonest or hurtful or disrespectful to somebody else or me, I'm free to take a breath and close my eyes and go inside and hold an image of that person in their highest and best, and then choose to cooperate only with that. I'm free to send loving energy to the image of that person who is being patient and respectful and loving and compassionate and generous and no one can stop me from choosing that as a focus of my mind energy. And when I did this book club a number of years ago for 4.5 years, every month we did a different book, so decidedly over 50 books we read. And we had 17 people on the call discussing this book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, and no less than 9 people interrupted the call to give a testimonial about the positive effects they felt in their life when they applied this blessing, when they interrupted their thoughts of anger or hurt or sadness or confusion or overwhelm, and they chose instead to focus on thoughts of abundance and peace and patience and images of other people in those highest and best qualities, images of themselves in their highest and best qualities. And it was transformational. People actually found significant benefit from this book that they'd only had about a month. Some even less than that. So again, there's an interview that's available as one of the many resources we make available absolutely free. For this show specifically, Pierre Pradervan, The Gentle Art of Blessing, which is a wonderful way, I think, to get an overview of the work rather than buying the book. And but he has 2 books. He has the book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, and he has the book, 365 Blessings to Heal Myself and the World. He has a number of other books, but those are the 2 that are relevant to the blessing work. So we have plenty of time for a conversation. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. How can we support you? What's on your mind today? How would you like to spend the next 17 minutes? I had somebody else in my office today was talking about somebody reaching out to them who's clearly angry at them and saying, I'm not angry at you. I'm not mad at you. And the question was, what do I do when somebody sends me a voice message or a text message or an email that's angry or nasty or hurtful, and I don't know how to respond? Well, most people in a professional setting at some level will have the recommendation that what's best to do is not respond. Don't hit reply and type in a long email. Don't hit reply and type in a short email. Just if it's not something that you solicited, if it's not something from someone that you're in an ongoing relationship with, it's probably best not to respond to an angry or hurtful or accusatory message like that. What's even better than simply not responding is stepping into the gentle art of blessing. Create an image in your mind of this person living into their highest and best, living into gratitude, appreciation, compassion, respect, patience. And pouring your mind energy into a visualization of them living into their best possible characteristics. And people are frequently out there choosing traits and behaviors that are far from their best, far from their most positive. And that's their choice. But I don't have to cooperate with that. I don't have to fight against it. I don't have to try and change it. I don't have to point out to them that they're wrong. person that was talking to me about this was talking about it because he and his wife had both received these questionable messages. And when I answered him in the session, I talked about the Pierre Prettervan and the General Order of Blessing, and I also talked about Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, which is a book about his theory that there are some people in the world that are just naturally givers and some people in the world that are just naturally takers. And a third category of people that will give to you, but they're always keeping score. And heaven forbid you don't keep up with giving them what they think you owe them because they did something nice for you in the past, etc. And if the balance sheet in their mind gets out of balance, then they turn into takers rather than givers. And the theory in the book is that there are people who will be overrepresented as takers in the bottom quarter of the socioeconomic level, so that people living in poverty are going to be people who've given all their stuff away. And there are going to be more givers in the poverty range than there are going to be in the rich, abundant range. But much to his surprise, what he discovered was givers are overrepresented in the lower quarter, as he predicted, but they're also overrepresented in the upper quarter. So there are more millionaires and billionaires who are actually givers than takers. And then when he discovered that, he had to figure out, okay, why? How could that happen? How could the trait of being a giver land some people in poverty and some people in extreme abundance and the millionaire club, etc.? And the more research he did on it, the more he came up with these characteristics that were essential so that people who were givers could grow and experience abundance. So the first thing was, he said, okay, you know, essentially what it boils down to is healthy givers make sure that they and their family of origin have what they need first, and then they give from their surplus. It's just like the idea of when the mask drops down on the plane, you want to put the mask on yourself before you start helping the children or the elderly. Make sure you've got what you need, and then give from your abundance. The next thing is that he discovered that the people who do well, even though they're givers and they have quite a bit of the financial resources, they do not give indiscriminately. They give to other givers. They do enough of their own personal research to find out, do they feel good about what this person is going to do with things if I give them my time, intelligence, money, and energy? So, think about being self-wise as you work with tools like this. Think about the blessing that comes to you when you choose loving thoughts and you choose to value loving thoughts and you choose to share only loving thoughts, because as this book says, that is the way that you teach only love. Other thoughts will cross your mind. Other thoughts will spin. And as this work also says to us, all minds are joined. We are invariably, we're going to have thoughts cross our mind in the middle of the day that don't really belong to us and they don't really have value for us unless we choose to give them value, unless we choose to pour our mind energy into them, unless we choose to devote a considerable amount of our energy focused on them, either fighting against them or trying to get them to come to fruition. But since all minds are joined, and any kind of thought that's ever been had by any human being might cross my mind at any moment, I want to understand that it's just a thought. And I want to understand the power and the leverage that I can bring to that by choosing to hold on to certain thoughts or value them or rehearse them. And as I do that, as I choose wisely, these thoughts that I'm choosing end up creating my experience of life. I really like the way it talked about it in the book, Jesus, My Autobiography. It says very, very clearly what I've already said in this talk. Your emotional system is part of your guidance system. And when you're experiencing an emotion that's pleasant, that's joyful, that's compassionate, that's, you know, whatever you would label as pleasant, you're probably headed in the right direction. And whenever you're experiencing an emotion that you would consider negative or unpleasant, you're probably headed in the wrong direction with your thoughts, your words, and your actions. So choose wisely, because what you pour your mind energy into, you're going to get more of. It's just the way the system works. So 563-999-3581. Plenty of people on the call, nobody in the chat room. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? What tips or tricks do you have for somebody who's trying to get a better life experience? We've had a number of people over this past few days talk to me about the negativity that is all over the media and that can pervade their lives if they stay plugged in. And we just encourage people to choose differently. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is that focus of conscious awareness in each new present moment that creates your experience of life. That's what this book has been pointing out to us ever since page 5, and keeps repeating for us in slightly different ways. And you don't experience anything that you haven't chosen. And the way you choose to interpret and respond to a life event is far more important to how you experience that life event than the event itself. This has always been the case. And as far as we know, it's going to remain the case. The best of what we currently know is what happens to you and around you in your life is nowhere near as important as how you choose to interpret and respond to those events. And when I state it just that way, that's exactly the way it's stated in the bottom line observations. The bottom line observations is a list of statements and observations that I hand to people in a first or second session. And what I say is each of these statements has earned its way onto this list. And the first one is, if whatever you're doing isn't working, feel free to try something else. And I tell people that's the hardest one right up front. Why? Because my assumption is you're not sick, crazy, stupid, lazy, or masochistic. And therefore, if that's true, I'm willing to be proven wrong, but if that's true, then you've got really good reasons for doing everything you're doing, even if it hasn't worked the last 37 times you did it. So the hardest one right up front, if whatever I'm doing isn't working, I should feel free to try something else. Number 2, blame is a luxury item. I've never seen blame lead to the productive or constructive resolution to a problem, yet I've seen kindergarten-age children that are expert at blaming. So I have my radar going in my own life personally, but especially in a session, for any indication that somebody's trying to hurt, blame themselves or blame somebody else or blame their circumstances for something in their life they don't like. And when that radar goes off, I call a timeout and I suggest that they choose differently because blame isn't going to help. The third observation is that after decades of trying, I finally woke up and realized that I can't make anyone do anything they don't want to do. I can't make a 3-year-old quit crying or an 8-year-old pick up her room or a 15-year-old come home on time. I can't make my boss give me the raise I think I deserve and she thinks I don't. The fourth observation is that I can only be responsible for and control my own emotions and reactions. I cannot control or be responsible for the emotions and reactions of anyone else, no matter how hard I try. And when I read that to people, most often I get nods of approval. And then I say to people, do you realize that you just agree to the fact that no one's ever hurt your feelings, no one's ever made you feel mad, angry, sad, scared, frustrated, or overwhelmed? And I usually get quite a bit of vehement pushback when I say that, because they don't believe they agreed to that. As a matter of fact, they've got examples in their lives of people who are making them furious and upsetting them at every turn. So I read it again, and I say, look, if I can't control or be responsible for somebody else's emotions, they can't control or be responsible for mine. And learning to deal with that, learning to take more and more 100% responsibility for every emotion that I create and therefore experience is a huge, huge important lesson for me to learn. The fifth observation is that my greatest strengths will at times be my greatest weaknesses. My greatest assets at times will be my greatest liabilities. And there's a host of ways to observe that in your life. The sixth observation is, every day I'm alive, I become more and more like my parents. Refusing to see this dooms me to live it without the possibility of change. Accepting this gives me the possibility to change my behavior as I see it happening. There's an important corollary here which says, your children will grow up to be more like you than anything you ever tell them you want to be or anything they want to be. So if you don't like what you see coming out of your children, the very best use of your energy is to focus more of your energy on yourself to become the kind of person that you want them to be. The seventh observation is that when I deny or avoid negative emotions or experiences in my life, I cut off an equal amount of the potential for positive emotions and experiences. Corollary here is that the best way to smother the intimacy in a relationship is to avoid conflict and confrontation. If you don't know how to turn confrontation into resolution, you can learn. There are therapists, there are books, there are teachers. And the last one I'll read today is number 8. Whatever happens to me and around me in my life is not nearly as important as how I choose to interpret and respond to those events and circumstances. And that's why we picked up this bottom line observations list to share it once again. What happens to me and around me in my life is nowhere near as important as how I choose to interpret and then respond to those events. That's what the Way of Mastery is trying to get us to understand. We are creating our experience of life by how we choose to interpret and respond to life. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a lovely show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, and it's July the 5th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Okay, we'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. He is actually on the road. You've heard us talk several times about the singing dentist who was at Heartland, and he's been a good friend of Michael's for many, many years. And Michael got a call and a text last night that Joel has about 24 hours, they're suspecting. And so Michael is not quite halfway to Nashville. He left this morning to hopefully get there before Joel transitions and assist with his wife, Betty. So Michael is on the road, but I talked to him just a minute ago, and he said he would be on the show. So we'll give him just a minute to get dialed in. I'm going to go ahead and turn on Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Jeannie. So is it the dentist or the wife who's in bad shape?
The dentist is okay. Getting ready to pass. Yeah. He's the one that Michael often will talk about. He wrote a song that says stuck in my story, my pain and my glory, or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was kind of the song leader at Heartland, and he's had some health challenges for a little bit, but we got the text last night that he probably has about 24 hours. So Michael's hoping to make it to, he's just south of Nashville. And so, and Michael just joined us. Hi, Michael. I was just telling him that you were on your way to Nashville to hopefully get to be with Joel before he transitions. And Susan's on the line with us.
Yeah. Curiosity. Yeah. Good for you, Michael. What a good friend.
Michael, can you hear us? Are you with us? I see you on the switchboard, but we can't hear you.
Yeah, you probably just want me to turn off my mute button. I know how you are.
Yeah, that works better. So I was just sharing you were on your way.
Right. Yeah, I'm planning to be there to hold the space and be the presence of love for him to remember who he is as he leaves his body behind and awakens in a new birth, a new reality. Someone that I've known for going on 30 some years.
Wow!
Actually, he used to be my publicity director. He would book things for me. And he's the guy you've heard me speak about before. They would say, "Yeah, if Michael Rice got a chance, he'd do a workshop in a phone booth." That's Joel. So I'm ready to go and have some final moments with him and hold the space. And I feel blessed by the opportunity to do that, to have the invitation to do that.
Still, I bet a lot of us think about what it's going to be like to go over onto the other side and what we may understand there that we don't understand here, and what we'll see and what we'll experience. It's a mind-blowing thing to think about because the mind can't go there.
That's
true.
At least
my mind.
Yeah, the mind's not designed. Well, you know, when you think about this energy field that we call human, and there's some interesting research that was done by, it's a Secret Life of Plants, Cleve Baxter. Cleve Baxter was a guy who ran a lie detector service. And one day Cleve decided to hook, one of the things they measure with lie detectors is the sweat in the skin by the resistance, galvanic skin response. Mm-hmm. When somebody sweats, the resistance drops, and that can be, one of the factors in deciding if somebody's telling a lie. So he decided to hook his lie detector up to a plant And with the idea of he's going to pour water on the plant and see how long it takes, a plant that's obviously needing water, how long it takes for the water to get to the leaves. He figured he'd be able to measure that resistance. When he did that, instead of getting the measurement that he expected to get, what he got was a sigh of relief that he would expect from a human that had just been relieved of some kind of stress.
Oh, my goodness.
So when you think about it, and went on to do, it's an interesting book, Secret Life of Plants, and all kinds of capabilities that don't seem to be in the instrument yet, but they're there because they're measurable. So if in fact there is a creator behind this whole thing that is motivating and building instruments to express what has not yet been expressed in the creation, if that's what's happening, you think about the fly, the mind of a mosquito. Mosquito opens its so-called eyes and its brain translates infrared energy, heat. Oh, there's blood, food, going to go get food, survival. That's what its quote-unquote mind is structured to do. What do you suppose the brain of a compound-eyed fly sees? Compound eyes looking, bringing in information from all. It's like the house of mirrors. What do you suppose they see? What's that instrument designed to do? And is this instrument we call a body-mind unit just the next step in what is waiting to come through? And we don't have a clue yet. They said in the ancient scriptures, the mind of man is not yet conceived of what lies in store. What's possible if we're not so busy with our past and our brain and its perceptual construct? If we know how to forgive and collapse that sucker and shut it down, what else is waiting to come through? I think we can make some assumptions if we look at the masters who had different things come through than the average bear. I think we could say that maybe this man Yeshua knew exactly what he was talking about. He'd set his instrument up to bring through things that were beyond anybody's comprehension. And he said, and you can do it too. Your instrument's designed for the same. But if you're busy with something from the past, if you're busy with false perception, if you're busy with perception, if you can't get out of your mind, then the mind is meant to serve the survival of the structure that you're in. But, you're not a mosquito and you're not a fly and you're not a human. That's just a form for expression. And if we are able to start listening, cancer. Cancer is an organ of expression being built to express an energy that somebody's attuned to. It's just like an eye. It's designed to receive light energy. It's an instrument to receive information. It's an expression of a capability. I think everything that we call a disease is also an expression of a capability. The key is to understand what capabilities don't serve the thriving and the expression of what's possible for us humans, but got stuck somewhere back in the genes or in the family history or the cultural history of something that was an organ of destruction and created death. What if we forgave all of that, gave all of that up, and really were able to listen? What else might develop? Is it possible that there'd be, I see cancer as an organ. It's expressing an energy that's there in the system. If we have higher capabilities, we've got eyes, we've got ears, this whole complex system with this little drum and these bones, and when these bones move, they create that's an amazing instrument. What do you suppose, if we were really listening, might be the next instrument that might develop in our physiology that might come into expression if we were on the high side of the possibility rather than stuck in the past of building things that express hostility and fear? Tumors and boils and, aches and pains. You know, what if we freed ourselves of all of that? To me, that's the objective of the work. You know, when Yeshua talks about to he that overcomes, when we're willing to be finished with the stuff that creates expressions in form, and when we start to think of, here's Ruka that's busy building an instrument for the expression of God knows what, speaking literally, that we haven't conceived of yet. And the way we, to me, the way we become available to that is by being out of our minds, getting that thing to shut up, being able to collapse it.
Do you think Ilia Delio, when she says that the electronics that we're developing and using is partly talking about that, as if, though, I know you were...
Tell me more about the thought.
Said. Well, Ilia Delio is a priest, I think. She's a colleague of my daughter's, and she's also a visionary. And she gave some kind of a talk recently where she said, you know, don't be alarmed at all the electronics that we're developing and using and how the kids dive into these virtual realities that appear to take us away from where we are now. She said, actually, that's where we should be going. And she said, we're going to become cyborgs. And I didn't understand what a cyborg was. I know that's part of a television series that I didn't really pay much attention to, but I wonder if partly what you're talking about could be one of the vehicles or one of the means for getting there could be these developments in electronics. I know I'm kind of mixing up two things, but it's how are we going to get there?
No, actually, you're right on track. No, I think you're right on track. Yeah. My understanding of a cyborg would be someone who is literally has had machines implanted in them that bring capabilities in that we don't have within the body as it is. So that might be the implantation of a chip or a whole microcircuit or maybe a whole, you know, camera processing system, who knows what. And, you know, that's a possibility. Who knows?
Who knows? I wonder if we could probably get there without that, too. But here we've invented it, and it does seem to have a kind of trajectory that nobody could really think of. Although science fiction is kind of amazing that way. Often science fiction will have visions of what's up ahead, and we think it's absolutely crazy.
So, my take is that as long as it's in the hands of someone connected to love rather than hostility and fear, it will probably be an expression of that. If it goes into the hands of hostility or fear, then it will go to the dark side. And that's why, you know, the opposite of that line from the Star Wars movie that says, may the force be with you. Like, okay, so there's this power that's building instruments of expression, and you want it to follow you. No, the force be with you is backwards. It's you be with the force. It knows where it's going when you allow it to lead. Ruka, she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. If we're with that force, then I think anything we would do would serve to take us to the next level because we'll get specific instructions. And for me, I feel like a great deal of this work has come from that place, things I could never have thought of with my own intellect or my own mind.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yep. Well.
So it's about keeping developing the ability to listen, to get the mind to shut up and to listen, to really get into a sensitive space where I can hear, and not that I'm listening with my ear, but that I can hear, perceive in a correct way the guidance that's coming from that which is so much bigger and waiting to come through us. You know, you look at the word repent, and it comes from the root pense in French, which means to think, to rethink. And it has more to do with changing the mind and being able to move You know, most people focus on what they're repenting. Oh, you horrible sinner. And they're focused on their horrible sin and their terror about it, their trauma. What? And, oh, my God, look what's happening to you also. Instead of, oh, I'm going to turn around. It means to turn around. I'm going to turn around and look the other way. I'm going to become receptive to what's waiting to come through rather than fighting against what I don't like and what is and pretending that somebody's out to get me. So can we turn and embrace at every moment, especially when challenged, especially when something resonates, something in the world resonates hostility or fear. And it's a practice. It's a major piece of work to get out of the old frequencies and mindsets of hostility and fear and literally, in the face of a challenge, turn and embrace what's Rukka telling us.
Totally. That's life work.
Just requires
watching,
a lot of
this. It does. Watching one's judgments. Judgments are a way of shutting out what really might be happening.
Yes. What's going on in the frequencies other than just the senses. This is going to be actually the second time that the trip that I'm making today is going to be the second time that I've gotten to be with someone in the deathing process. And I'm looking forward to developing my ability to listen on another level and be guided as to what, if any, my role is going to be in the process of this transition.
Right. Oh, my gosh, yeah. You get a lot of experience with hospice work doing that. Man, you're sitting with people who are heading out.
Choosing to be a doula.
Yeah. Right. Nice word. Nice thought.
So I sure appreciate everybody that's listening, holding the space for Joel and myself and Betty and David and all the whole family. Just holding the space for them as this happens. A lot of people have a lot of terror and trauma and pain and who knows what from generations of unresolved loss and grief and not understanding. And so if everybody holds space for deeper levels of understanding and guidance, I'd sure appreciate the support.
Yeah, you're a nice guy, Michael Rice. I remember when we were down with Luke, down in near where you are, and Luke was having an intervention for his alcohol problem. You offered to drive some distance to come and be with us. And we just couldn't fit it in. Things were so wild. We were using somebody else's house, etc. But I'll never forget that.
I recall
that. It was just really nice. Yeah.
Well, holding the space. So what's exciting in your life today? That's what's
exciting
in my life today.
Oh, a lot of exciting stuff. It's very exciting. Well, I wanted to ask Jeannie. Evidently, there's been some health thing, and I haven't been following the news. I saw something on Facebook, and I wanted to have Jeannie give a report.
Okay. I'm actually on the other side, and it's so good to feel good. But I had several days, about a week ago, I guess, I had this pain in my left side under my rib cage, but it was kind of like I was guessing it's where the colon that goes across and then goes into the downward in that corner. And so Michael suggested I go get a clonic, which I hadn't had in years. And I went and did that, and, of course, the little girl, she was a little Oriental lady that was probably didn't weigh 100 pounds, and it felt like I had somebody that weighed 300 pounds pushing on my guts. And she was excellent, and she said she could feel it. And so it was like a block right there. And, you know, I got relief from that. I felt bruised afterwards, but then – Sunday, we had family time planned. We were going to take a boat and go out to the lake and do all this. And about 3:30 Sunday morning, I spent 4 hours just major purge from both ends of the spectrum, and it was awful.
Oh.
And so I chose to not go on the boat. I figured, as yuck as I felt, that boat waves probably would not help. And Michael chose to stay home with me instead of going, but I stayed in bed most of the day and ate soup and just rested and laid around, and it all passed, and so I'm feeling much better. And so the timing of that was perfect, that Michael was still here when I was going through all that instead of it happening after he left. So
let me add a note of history and levity to the story. Jeannie and I first met on eHarmony.com. And eHarmony has a process that you go through where you send back and forth questions and answers, two or three rounds where they're kind of the firewall. You don't know who you're talking to except by name and state or city. So at any time, either person involved in the communication going through eHarmony can say, okay, I don't want to have anything more to do with this person, and they'll never find out who you are, and you'll never find out who they are. Well, we had gone through those rounds, and we finally, you know, trust each other enough to exchange phone numbers, and we had a conversation on the phone. And the first phone call, the first conversation we had, ended up, we talked about how bowels were working and what was happening with the colon. And so here's Jeannie getting to the next layer of clearing out the challenges that she's had with a lazy colon pretty much all her life, and you know, next layer of cleansing going on, and it was pretty intense, but
just that way,
part of the healing process.
So yeah, well, I was going to ask, you know, on a radio show you might not want to ask, and I'm always innately nosy, going to ask, what was it? And you sort of said, Michael, so thanks.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, I mean, if you're eating the sad diet in America, then you probably have, or if you have eaten it for any length of time, which most people have, you know, it's kind of a food-free diet. The things that they called foods that were put in your mouths were grown on dirt instead of soil. Then probably there's some significant deposits within the colon. Back in my early days as a naturopath, one of the things that I did is we guide people through a process called the Kalima process. And it's where you do some deep, much like a colonic, only it's self-administered. And you do some deep colon cleansing using some specific herbs that are designed to dissolve the plaque that's in the colon. And I have seen pieces of black rubber-like material that look just about like, except for the shape of the colon, just about what a piece of rubber laying on the side of the road is that's rolled off the tire of a truck. I've seen pieces of that 3, 4, and 5 feet long come out of people's colon.
Wow.
And most people are walking around not only with that condition in their colons. I mean, you think about how people tend to, you're quite the opposite there, but how people tend to blow up, kind of blow up like a tick as they age. And what's really happening is that mucus has two purposes in the body. One of them is to lubricate. It's a thin, watery substance. That's what it's designed to be, to lubricate and keep things moving throughout the structure. And where there's toxicity, what happens is that that substance is designed to thicken and trap the toxicity and keep it from going into tissue. Now, that can happen. I mean, when I would work with people, and you've heard me say this before, but I'll extend it just a little bit. I can remember working with one woman who, on about, I don't remember exactly what day, maybe the sixth or seventh day of her Kalima process, she woke up in the morning and her body looked normal. She was a little bit overweight. You know, she looked normal. But by noon, she literally looked 9 months pregnant.
Wow.
I mean, that much of a change in 3 or 4 hours. She looked pregnant. And by midnight, that was cleared from her body. That pregnant look was gone. Now, my understanding and interpretation of that would be there's a whole lot of hardened mucus in the body, and when it's hardened, just like, you know, if you blow your nose in the Kleenex and come back 3 days later, it, you know, when you, you know, let's say you had a cold and you were really just, oh, blowing out, man, that Kleenex was full, but you went back 3 days later and it was like there's almost nothing there. What happened to it? It dehydrated. An internal nose blow every time they eat junk food, goes into their colon or goes anywhere throughout the body. I've seen people in doing the Kleeman process where, let's say, you know, their left shoulder, you know, the muscles in the front, the pecs, appeared to expand, like they just all of a sudden doubled in size. They just all of a sudden had this balloon going on. It's like, what happened? Have I got some sort of terrible disease going on? No, that's a place where there's been hardened mucus. And you're now vital enough, your body says, okay, we can handle this now. So it reliquifies it. So what happens? If you took 100 Kleenexes that were all dehydrated and had them in one little pile and rehydrated, what would they do? They'd be the size of a dog.
Wow.
They'd blow up. And that's exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. So I've watched people doing the Kleenex process where different parts of the body just, and I've had this happen myself. It's like, whoa, well, that's interesting. And then, as long as you're keeping lymphatics going, you're keeping the energy moving, then the body will drain that out. It will pass out. And you'll see ropey, stringy, white strings of mucus come out. If you're doing the right kind of herbs, black strings of mucus will come out. We'll oftentimes see, what am I thinking of? When you were kids, the little puffballs you'd see. What was it called? Little white puffballs in the swamp. I'm not thinking of the name of them, what they are. But in any event, you'll see those things coming out of the colon, and they're literally things that were seeded in the colon that were precancerous, and the body's throwing them off, getting rid of them. In fact, people would have intestinal bullets. And what that meant was something that had implanted itself in the intestinal wall. When the body was strengthened enough to start to heal, it would literally pop those things out. If it was had been forced in, and you know, it would ultimately become an ulcerated opening in the colon. That when the body was strong enough and was re-knitting and strengthening, it would pop that out. And when it would pop it out, it would pop it, you know, like an elastic so hard that when it hit the other side of the colon, it'd be like somebody had been punched. An intestinal bullet,
wow.
Boom, those things letting loose. And that's part of the detoxing and cleansing of the body. It's part of what needs to take place. There's actually a really good book. I talked about it one day last week. You can get it on Amazon. It's called Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management by a fellow named Bernard Jensen. Bernard's the guy, the last time I saw him, he was 88 or 89. We were on a platform together in Deerfield Beach, Florida, at a psychologist's office. They had a conference, and we were both presenting at that conference. There was another conference that I presented at, and the program I'm talking about, the colon cleansing program called the Kalima. There's a board that you put on one end of the toilet. You have a 5-gallon bucket that's elevated. You have a tube and a high enema probe that you insert rectally, and you gently let water into the colon to flush it out. So it's kind of like doing a colonic, but you do it yourself. And the man who invented that whole cleanse was a man named D.E. Irons. I'm sure you've heard me talk about him before. And he was 80 in the conference that he and I only ever met him once, spoke at. And when he got up to speak and they introduced him and they said what his age was, he then had his wife come up and they introduced their 2-year-old, I forget whether it was a daughter or son, I think it was a son, very proudly at 80, his 2-year-old baby.
Wow.
So he was pretty vital. But Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel is a really excellent read if you want to know more about what's going on with your colon, and it's pretty important stuff. He gives, in that
wow.
book, he gives, oh, I don't know, 6 or 7 different cleanse levels for detoxing the colon, from a really gentle one to the extreme of the D.E. Irons Kalima program.
Wow. I just, so I never,
and I just, go ahead.
Yes, go ahead, Jean. No, you go ahead.
I just had a thought, you know, the besides the intestines and the bowel, the next eliminative organ, if those aren't working, is the skin. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, to tie a lot of this together, you know, I've had some issues around my back and my lower back and everything. And with the process that Michael and I've been doing the last while, actually my spine has been broken out. I mean, it's just like right up and down my spine is the only place that it's been. And that's still there. I just now reached behind me to feel to see if it had gone away after all this release. But, and then, you know, on top of that too, mental processing and stuff that's been going on and going to the next level on all of that. So, you know, it's like the crap has to come out. And I talked to a girl. I actually have a product that I had bought from her, and it just came the other day. And so I was asking her to make sure that I was going to be taking it right. One of them is a probiotic, and then the other one is for gut health. And so I was telling her what had happened, and she said, well, if you just had the colonic, she said, you know, and all those toxins, I mean, whatever was blocking it, you know, she broke it loose with the colonic and the massage on my gut and everything. And she said, so those toxins get in your system. She said the fastest way for your body to get rid of it is out both ends. You know, so, I mean, all of that makes sense.
And or the skin.
My back. Right, and my back breaking out, you know. And but like I said, it's just up and down my spine. It's not on the other parts of my back. So,
and what else have you been doing? And what else have we been doing for several months? You've been going to a new chiropractor. You've been really doing some awesome work on, you know, working through some spinal issues. And all the years of you sitting at a computer with your neck and all, that's another part of what you're redoing. And anytime that, from a naturopath point of view, the medicine I'm trained in, anytime somebody's skin is breaking out, it's a reflection of something that's not working in the colon. Colon is a major eliminative organ. It's designed to remove what doesn't belong through the lymphatic system. And whenever it's not working, there are reflexes to the whole body, to the skin. The skin is the largest eliminative organ. And when something's blocked and isn't working in the colon, then that's when things like boils and pimples and skin eruptions will start to happen. Because the body's saying, I got to get rid of this. You know, it's like a volcano. You know, what's it doing? It's opening up and releasing things from inside of the earth. Well, a pimple, a boil, outbreaks on skin level. I know I've got one fellow that I worked with. Oh, Jesus, he was back at Heartland 25 years ago. He had extreme eczema. And after about, he was on the sports team for 2 years. And after about maybe 8 months, if I'm remembering correctly, 8 or 9 months, and he'd worked with doctors and done all kinds of things to try to get rid of his eczema. And after 8 or 9 months of being on the fresh and raw diet at Heartland and doing his work, his eczema just disappeared. Skin eruptions are the body trying to find a way to get rid of something. They're not a disease. Now, unfortunately, if you go to, you know, the drug-oriented practitioner, they'll tend to say, oh, well, I have a cream. I have a substance I can put over that, force that to stop throwing out that garbage. Like, well, why would I want to do that? My body's trying to get rid of something. So you've got a cream that will frustrate the natural process of the body getting rid of this. Where is that stuff going to go? Oh, I don't know any. And I had that conversation with somebody. In fact, I was doing a Kalima process. This goes back again into the early days of developing this work. And I had there's a reflex point from the lungs to the cheeks. And I was doing some really deep tissue cleansing. I was actually doing the Kalima process. And that was back when I was just first starting. You know, I developed this work in South Florida. And then I started to get invitations. People who were into South Florida went back home and said, hey, invite Michael Rice to come up to Michigan, come up here, there. And I was just starting to travel and had kind of let go of my classes in South Florida and was traveling. And I've got these two big red rashes on my cheeks that are weeping sores on both cheeks. And I understood what was going on. Lungs were my challenge. And I had a friend who had a friend who was a skin doctor, and he said, look, you know, he won't even charge you. I talked to him, just go see him. And I did. And he, oh, yeah, I could just give you some drugs. We'll take care of that. No problem. Here's this cream. It'll take care of it. Like, and I asked him, well, what about the fact that my body's trying? And he literally said, well, I don't know anything about that, but I don't know how to stop it. It's like, thanks. I don't want to stop it.
Wow.
Well, let me give you this prescription just in case. I tore the prescription up. No. I mean, it's silly. It's silly. If, you know, if I brought a plumber to my home and there was this mess in the backyard of, you know, sewage and all of that, and he said, oh, I know where, look, I can stop that from flowing up in your backyard. I have a 4-inch cork. You got a 4-inch pipe down there. I'll just put this cork in the pipe and the yard will be totally cleaned up. What would you say to him?
Right.
Where is it going to go if you put a 4-inch cork in it? It's going to go right up
right.
in the house. And that's exactly what right. interruptions, that's exactly what, you know, flu, the cold. They're never going to find a cure for the common cold because the common cold is not a disease. Common cold is the body saying, I have something I need to get rid of. You don't want to suppress the common cold. You want to cooperate. Your body's throwing off what doesn't belong. The lungs are an eliminative organ. The sinuses are an eliminative organ. And when you find yourself in a place where there's excess congestion, then you want to shift your diet over to an eliminative diet so that you're cooperating with the natural way the structure grows rather than, because the person who suppresses the cold ends up with the flu. The person who suppresses the flu ends up with something like emphysema. The person who suppresses the emphysema ends up with lung cancer.
Wow.
Because the body can't get rid of what it's trying to get rid of. You need to cooperate with elimination, and you need to make sure that your eliminative organs are working properly. That's so important. Like you do, you know, you often talk about you're out for a walk. It's one of the best things you can do to keep the eliminative organs operating, to keep the lymphatics going. Walking is a powerful way, and breathing is a powerful way to keep the lymphatics moving and keep it happening. And then, of course, doing
yeah.
the corollary work, you know, mental, emotional work, generational pattern of hostility and fear and rage and, you know, whatever else comes up. It's got to come up and it's got to come out.
So that is really interesting stuff, Michael. I just got my cold sore gone. It took about a week, but it disappeared on its own. That's a good
right.
sign, I guess.
That's a good sign. Your body's finished with that piece of elimination. Yes. It's ridding itself
wow.
of something.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jeannie, if you would, maybe when we complete, I'm going to be driving. I'd likely not think of it, but this was a question. Remember the other night as we were talking about this, Joe called and had an interest in this topic. So maybe you could send him a link to this show with just a note saying, you know, here's more conversation about the colon issues, because that's what he was talking about.
Okay, mm. We'll do.
Cool. Awesome. Well, what else be on your mind, young lady?
Oh, well, the fact is I have to leave. I've got a rehearsal, and I'm going to have to leave the show, and I wanted to listen, but I can't today. So I'm glad I could explain while I'm going to drop right off. Get
well,
going.
Enjoy your rehearsal.
So, thank you, and thanks for all the information. Good luck with your friend. And I'm glad
all right,
you're
thank
better,
you,
Jeannie. Boy, yeah. All right. Bye, everybody.
All right. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye. Right. Quick question, Jeannie. When you
yep.
put that food in the car, where did you put the muffins?
They're in the cooler.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thank you. Excuse me for interrupting the show with that. I'm on the road and I need to know where my snack is. Got some awesome homemade muffins to snack on to keep me traveling. So we've got about, 20 minutes left? So if you're out there in listener land. Which one? Let's have a conversation. Any, does that, the conversation we just had, does that open anything for anybody? Any questions? Any refinements?
We have a hand up.
Huge. Oh, great. Let's go for it.
I believe this is Doug, 314. We haven't heard from you in a while. How are you doing, young man?
Oh, it's good to hear your voice. Come on in. Welcome.
Hello there. good to hear your voice. Well, I have a question related to the topic of the day. I've been dealing with this long COVID for a long time. I've tried everything under the sun, and I'm sometimes, you know, I feel like very, very gradually getting better, perhaps. But I decided to fast. I did some research on fasting and COVID, and I was like, I just need to do something to really reset, shift the system, and so on. So I've been in a fast now for about, I'm looking for other thoughts about what to do to support the fast. I've been drinking just water with lemon for about 40 hours, and I've been nauseated this morning. I feel like I'm, and of course I've had my traditional headache, and I feel like the body's in detox, you know, trying to, you know, I mean, all those senescent cells are dying and, you know, stuff's going on. So I'm looking for ideas on how to support that. And if it's a good idea to, it seems to me that I just want to stick with water and maybe a little lemon and not much else, but I could add something, you know, in a little bit. There's this clinic, I don't know, it's over in Europe somewhere that has had some good results fasting people for, you know, 3, 4, 8, 10, 15 days. I'm not there. You've done up to 40. Okay. So I feel like, well, this isn't going to kill me. It's, you know, it's just going to be uncomfortable. And then I expect I'll get through this to a better place. So that's what I'm looking for, is like thoughts about what would be supportive to this process, if you have any.
Well, there's an interesting story in the scriptures that will probably key in for you. And you'll remember the disciples are out and they're doing this healing work, and they come back to Yeshua and say, man, we've been healing people, but you know, there's this one guy, I don't know if there were maybe more than one, but we just couldn't get it to move. We just, I don't know what, you know, what are we doing wrong? And he says, those ones only come out with prayer and fasting.
Right, yeah.
So what happens when you fast? Taking food into your structure is a relatively inefficient process. It takes a lot of energy to milk nutrition, or to milk energy out of the nutrition that we take in. And so in the naturopathic system of things, if you were brought up in a naturopathic lifestyle, and I'll admit I don't do this, although there are periods of my life for years where I have, but we don't do this, and we've actually been talking about getting back to it. But the standard process is one 24-hour period per week, you only drink water. And then every quarter, so every 3 months, 4 months, every 3 months, you would do 3 days of fasting. And then once a year, you would do a week-long fast. And that's part of health maintenance. And what happens when you fast is all of the energy that goes into food, the thesis behind it, is all of the energy that's going into digesting the food and eliminating the waste is now relieved of its job, and now it can go to work detoxing and cleansing and moving things out that don't belong. And, you know, many spiritual traditions, fasting is, you know, one of the keys. And so I offer you right on track with that. If I were going to do a fast, I would add to that lemon, so that it's energetically balanced, just a little bit of maple syrup, the lowest grade you can, grade B, you see if you can find it, because that's got more minerals in it. And I'd add as much cayenne pepper as I could take. Because cayenne pepper, you know, I was talking about the mucus earlier. What burns the mucoprotein bonds, what opens them best, is lemon and cayenne pepper. And cayenne pepper acts to literally break those bonds that keep the mucus in its dehydrated state, help to open it up so that it can rehydrate and be flushed out by the eliminator organs. So I would add
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah.
I do have a friend in Florida. I'm actually on Friday. I'm flying up to. We've got a meeting with a scientist looking at some health, discoveries. We're working on creating through a couple of political people and some megabuck people are interested in actually delivering health to America, an actual health care plan to put into effect throughout the United States. And so he has a product that he sells that is actually based in mostly suppositories that take you through different phases of, accelerating the body's ability to remove those senescent cells and then stimulating stem cells and feeding those stem cells so they become strong and are able to grow into whatever they need to grow into. And so if you like, I'll connect you up with his products, and I know we can get, I don't remember, John or Jeannie, I think we've got a 10% and maybe a 15% or 20% discount on his products. I'm not sure. So if you want something that, is specifically formulated for, cleaning out the senescent cells and strengthening the stem cells and elimination of autophagy and such.
Yeah, that sounds on the mark. I've done the lemon, cayenne, maple syrup, before, and I was just in this.
Uh-huh.
I'm very open to that. I was trying to avoid, in particular, feeding my body any calories at all. I felt like in this case, I need to just no maple, no sugar, nothing. So that I have to digest whatever's in each cell that doesn't belong. And I don't know if that's the best plan or if I should add this stuff. So having said that, do you think your thoughts on that would be to still go ahead and add some maple syrup?
Well, here's my take. The maple syrup is going to be very easy to digest. There are a lot of minerals in maple syrup. And the reason for using it, the lemon, there's the aspect of what kind of calories you're taking in. The calories would be next to nil from that little bit of maple syrup. Not saying, drink it. I'm just saying just put, enough in to balance the tartness of the lemon energetically so that there's a balance in the energy that you're
taking
in.
All right, I think that's...
If you're just doing the lemon, it's a little extreme in terms of its energy impact.
Two tablespoons in a a quart of water or something, along with the lemon of one teaspoon, something like that. I don't know.
When I do it, we've got bottles that are, 23 ounces, and I don't measure it, but when I do that with lemon, I'll take a whole lemon and put in this 23-ounce bottle, and I'll put in, I do it by eye and pour it, but it's probably not much more than maybe between a half a teaspoon and a teaspoon is what I do, and then I add cayenne until I go, oops, that's getting a little too hot. I know my threshold, and I'll just add cayenne until I realize it's too hot. And again, that's what tends to break those mucoprotein bonds. And that's where things like organisms and such hide is in that mucus.
Sure. That's not much lemon, much maple syrup at all. So you put a whole lemon? A whole lemon? Do you... blend it?
I put a whole lemon
what?
In a 20... No, I just juice the lemon. Pardon me. When I say a whole lemon, I'm talking about the juice from a lemon. If
All
I
right.
had organic lemons and a good blender, I'd blend the whole thing up, but the organic lemons are not easy to find.
All right.
Yeah, you could
well,
do the
that's a
but
lot
I'm just
of
talking,
lemon.
I just do the juice.
That's a lot of lemon in there. So, okay. That's
well,
a lot
that's why
more
you
than
want
I've been
the balancer.
In.
But lemon, if you look at the atomic structure of most fruits and vegetables, the atoms rotate to the right. Lemon is what they call lateral rotary. It actually rotates to the left. It goes opposite. And, in naturopathic medicine, it's kind of looked at as a rotor-rooter, kind of like it goes in and it starts to just clean things out.
Okay. Now that's...
So you want enough to make an impact.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to drag myself up to Walmart and get some lemons, I think. I think sometimes they even have organic ones because I'm about out. But good.
Perfect.
It sounds, that's
cool.
Sounds,
we'll hold the space. And the other thing I would invite you to do is to really look at, since COVID struck, what kind of thought patterns has it resonated for you? How has your breathing been? And I'd be looking at doing some forgiveness work around. You know, my case, they talk about the killing off of viruses. You can't kill off something that's not alive. The virus is not life. It has no life. It can't reproduce it. It just isn't. What it is it's a fragment of DNA. That's my take. And as such, it carries information. If we get these fragments of DNA floating around that get into our structure that are of a higher level of vibration than we normally live at, then we're going to tend to be elevated by them. If we get something that attaches to, you know, my take is nobody's died of COVID. What people are already killing themselves with, you know, you go back to the ancient teachers who were talking physics, and they said, with man, death began. We made the process up. How did we make it up? By engaging in energetic patterns that didn't belong. Remembering the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term that means off the mark. The wages of sin is death. If we engage in frequencies that don't belong, then over a period of time, it looks like we age, but it's got nothing to do with time. It's got to do with the toxic energies that we're taking in. And my offering would be, and I'm saying this from experience of having had COVID, it's found it to be a really powerful upgrade for both Jeannie and myself, is that that fragment is of a disintegrative nature, and if there's a matching disintegrative energy in me, there's something for it to attach to. But it's not the virus that's going to harm me, it's what it attaches to in me that is already of a disintegrative nature, and it's inviting me to work through it. It's offering me the opportunity to work through it and have the health upgrade rather than, you know, oh, I have to do the same thing as I spoke about with the skin eruption. I have one friend who was very distraught when I had these skin eruptions. Oh, you're detoxing too fast. Oh, you better stop that. Go see the doctor. It's like, no, I'm at a pace my body's comfortable with, and I'm willing to allow this to continue. And, you know, it ain't continued for, I don't even remember now exactly. It was probably somewhere between 6 months and a year I had this going on traveling around the country. But I'm thankful I did it because it took a load off my lungs. Part of the process. Wow. So my offering would be to really be doing some soul searching on what's the day you got COVID, what was going on, what kind of things have surfaced that maybe are out of what usually is going on in your life, what's usually surfaced, and what are you being invited to forgive? And it's giving you the gift of resonating and showing you that if you do the work of freeing yourself from it, then there's going to be a load lifted, and whatever tissue was being burdened by it will youth instead of age as a result of the healing work you do.
All right. Yep. Sounds good. All right.
Well,
very good.
And the other thought that comes is to ask, you know, you started to work on the codependence intensive. How has that been going? Are you working through those videos and doing those assignments?
Yeah, I haven't. I just haven't. I haven't done it.
Okay.
So that's a
I'd offer that.
Good
I'd
reminder.
That's the invitation. You know, when I say oh, I've been struggling,
right.
So I'm trying to get through this, it's one of the keys to getting through it is digging in and doing that level of work because that's the source level of where things happen that turn out to be deterioration of the body. That's the source level. The opening words of the Book of John, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became what happens in our physiology. And I've got to work through that mind energy that's of any form of disintegrative nature. So I'd suggest you go back and maybe start from, go back and review your evaluation. In fact, you've probably got some fresh evaluation. I don't know. You probably got some evaluations still available from the intensives you've done. I go log into Y, the letter Y again, .com, put in your credentials,
select do a new evaluation, let G or I know by text. When it's done, we'll give you some feedback on exactly what to work with, and then start with the feedback videos that go with the beginning of the intensive for the evaluation. Start looking at what are the issues, what do you need to be looking at next, and then start to go through that. You know, it's big. It's 90 hours of video, but it sounds like you're ready for the next level of your work.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate the support and the good insights and ideas.
You got it, sir.
All right. Have a good
All right. Any other
safe
thoughts
journey
for you, then?
And I'll just say have a safe journey and a spiritually transcendent experience with that event that you're
well,
about to
well.
Cooperate
Question.
With. Yeah, that.
You know, I'm just thinking, what year was it that you were at Heartland? Do you remember? When you came and were on the support team with your daughter? Was that 91?
Gosh, that would be my best guess right about there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you might know Joel, because Joel was actually living at Heartland for, I think, the first 2 or 3 years that we were there. He was there, and he was a music director. He was doing some music stuff. Do you remember him? And it might have been after he
honestly. Left. Yeah, I don't honestly remember him by name, at least, and by description that you've given so far on the show today. So I don't recall him.
Yeah. The year that we were there, was there much singing going on with in the intensive? Because he would do a few concerts and things if there was much singing. And
yeah, I don't think that doesn't come to mind. That there was. So.
I think he was there in 80 and 90, so it might have been 91 when you were there. But anyway, thanks for holding the space for him and for me.
Okay, you bet. You got that. I'll do that.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Lessons. Bye. Well, Ms. Jeannie, we've got a couple minutes left. Any other thoughts for you?
No, I was just going to add, you know, as far as during COVID and everything, one of the biggies for me that I had to work on was fear. That was, you know, one of the first things that came up for me, you know, around getting COVID. I mean, there was, you know, so many people that were dying from it. And so looking at, you know, immortality or, you know, what I had bought into. And, yeah, I really had to work through a lot of that.
Yeah, coming face-to-face with mortality is a big one.
Yeah.
And add, you know, a piece of work that would many, many people would benefit from would be canceling the need to live and doing a mind shifter like dying is safe, easy, and wonderful for me and making friends with that and that being part of lifting that fear and recognizing that we're not bodies, that we're beings, and this is just an instrument. And, you know, if I move to a new house, I move to a new house. It doesn't mean that I'm gone. Not in that house anymore. So, you know, letting go of that whole concept of being vulnerable to death, I think, is an important one. And then, you know, I'll finish the show with that quote from Revelations where Yeshua says, to he or she that overcomes, and I'd offer overcomes the energetic patterns of hostility or fear, will not taste of the second death, and I'd offer that's the death of the body. They will become a pillar. And a pillar is a fixture in the temple of the Creator. The temple is not for curtaining the church. It's the body. They will become a pillar and shall go out no more. We're going to stop killing ourselves. I'm here to vote that we stop killing ourselves, that we actually step into the role of what we are designed for as human beings, and that's to be the eternal expressions of love. And that's what we're here to support you in. In the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. That's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You can give it, and we're here to support you. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle.